You're listening to Groundwire, community news from coast to coast to coast.
Can you imagine if everybody decided that they wanted to occupy every park in our city?
Yeah! Imagine the change we would get!
They're against the big hand of government. What do you think this is? This is the big hand of government crushing the democratic will of the majority of wheat farmers in Western Canada.
The assistant manager came out and said that what Pat and I were doing wasn't acceptable and we would need to leave within, 5 minutes or the cops would be called.
Welcome to the November 6th edition of Groundwire, brought to you by the National Campus and Community Radio Association. Groundwire is grassroots news from people on the ground from coast to coast to coast. A different campus community radio station produces each episode of Groundwire. This time, it was produced by us at CHW Radio in London, Ontario. I'm your host, Ed Von Ettercass. Today on Groundwire, Canadian farmers protest the dissolution of the Canadian Wheat Board. A lesbian couple speaks out after getting kicked out of a Blenheim Tim Hortons. All that is coming up, but first, let's look at the headlines.
On October 7th, over 3 months after the lockout of the Simon Fraser University Student Society staff, the bargaining committee met with a mediator, and by the end of the day, an agreement was reached between the board and CUPE. On October 11th, the staff officially returned to work. The offer that the union members reluctantly accepted under the pressure of a continued lockout would keep existing workers at the same pay level, but reduce the pay of future hires. The offer was similar to one that had been previously rejected by a vote of the members in the bargaining unit. The rejection was explained on September 14th by Jan Gunn, Member Services Coordinator of QP Local 3338, and Lawrence Jones, a staff member of the SFSS for 16 years.
The bargaining committees have met, but I wouldn't call that collective bargaining, not when, we're under the gun. That's not collective bargaining.
It's apparently quite unprecedented to try to put in place a process that looks like collective bargaining, but really it's like a shotgun wedding.
This report was compiled by Justin Lansley at CJSF.
The Canadian boat in the Freedom Flotilla was seized in international waters off of the Gaza Strip in an attempt to break the Israeli blockade. The Canadian boat, the Tahrir, set sail Wednesday, the 2nd of November, from a Turkish port with an Irish ship as part of a very small Freedom Flotilla. On board were four Canadians, among them London activist and University of Western Ontario professor David Heap. They had been part of a larger fleet this summer, which had never reached Gaza Strip after being stymied in Greek ports in Crete. The Tahrir was boarded in international waters near the Gaza Strip by the Israeli Navy the morning of November 4th. As of the afternoon of the 4th, no word has been received as to the status of the detained activists. Wendy Goldsmith is a member of the Canada Boat to Gaza Steering Committee. CHRW's Kevin Estakri asked her if they had been able to reach the detained professor.
We haven't. There's all kinds of things being tweeted, rumors on Facebook, but we don't have a confirmation about what has happened to them except that they were boarded and they had some interaction with the Israeli military. They were illegally boarded in international waters.
Do you know if they'll be sent back, they'll be safe, or are they detained?
We don't have that information yet. We are certainly concerned for their safety. We're asking all Canadians to act in support of this and call their local members of parliament, as well as Canada's Foreign Minister John Baird, to tell them to impress the Israelis to ensure the safety of those aboard the two ships.
In 2010, Mining Watch Canada obtained a disturbing report, never before released to the public. The report was commissioned by the Prospectors and Developers Association of Canada. It revealed that the Canadian mining companies are implicated in four times as many violations of corporate social responsibility as mining companies from other countries. Corporate social responsibility ensures that companies uphold the spirit of law, ethical standards, and the international norms. CKUT's David Tassium spoke to Jen Moore of Mining Watch. For her, this raises an important issue.
McGill University non-academic staff, or MUNACA, have been off campus for 7 weeks and instead have been pounding the pavement calling for better conditions. They're asking for parity in their working conditions with other non-academic staff at similar institutions in Montreal. McGill University administration finally came back to the bargaining table with MUNACA. Although, according to MUNACA, they made some progress during 2 days of negotiations, the key issues such as staffing rights and job security still remain unresolved. Also last week, McGill was awarded a second injunction further expanding the current no free speech zone. Until now, the injunction prohibits picketing on McGill's main campus as well as on the McDonald campus in Saint-Anne-de-Bellevue. Jerome Turk, Regional Vice President for Quebec of the Public Service Alliance of Canada, speaks about the way MUNACA deals with the extended injunction.
So we decide that one of the McGill projects that was not covered by the injunction is the new hospital that they're actually building. So we decide as a day of protest we're going to go and picket on the site. And we got support from construction workers who respected our picket lines. There is amongst the QFL family, people understand that scabs are not welcome. And in a situation like that, people don't cross the picket line. So they give us full support. These people lost a day's pay to support the MUNACA workers because they believe that their cause is just and that it's about time that these conflicts get settled.
How could I be the last to know when they told me where the fool had gone? Oh, I was my youngest one. Up there on the hills, they're climbing on. You went up with an open heart when they found you was overcome. Those hands, they seemed so long.
Local London artist Baja Bulat singing her song Gold Rush. Now let's look at our features. In mid-October, the Government of Canada announced plans to dismantle the Canadian Wheat Board. This institution had long been a controversial sticking point in Canadian politics, especially in the West. Set up by an act of government in 1935, the Wheat Board acts as the sole purchaser of wheat, barley, and corn grown in Canada. In theory, this allows farmers to get a better price for their grain than they would on their own, but many have sought to opt out of the board, saying they would get better prices if they marketed the product themselves. The proposed dismantling of the board has caused huge controversy, sparking protests across the prairies. With more on that story, we go to Michael Welch, with CKUW in Winnipeg.
Farmers pay for the wheat board. Farmers run the wheat board. And only farmers have the right to decide the future of the wheat board.
That was Maude Barlow, author and national chairperson of the Council of Canadians, speaking at a rally on October 28th in front of the Canadian Wheat Board offices in downtown Winnipeg. The rally was organized in response to the federal government's decision to dismantle the board's monopoly over barley and wheat sales. The Conservatives' determination to forge ahead with their plan in the face of a recent plebiscite in which the majority of farmers authorized the board to maintain the current single desk has invited charges of undemocratic behavior on the part of the Harper government. Here is former NDP Member of Parliament Bill Blakey.
So here we are having to defend democracy against people that say they're against the big hand of government. What do you think this is? This is the big hand of government crushing the democratic will of the majority of wheat farmers in Western Canada.
Created with the passage of the Canadian Wheat Board Act in 1935, the CWB now sells grain on behalf of all prairie wheat and barley farmers with an eye to securing good prices in an often unstable market. Board supporters like farmer and former director of the National Farmers Union, Fred Tate, have cautioned that the board is a critical guard against predatory foreign agribusiness companies like Cargill.
This corporate greed controls increasingly our seed supply. It controls our grain handling system. It controls our fertilizer, the supply and the pricing. It controls our herbicide and pesticide, the supply and the pricing. It controls the transportation system and the grain handling system and our access to that. This flood of corporate power is not an event that occurs periodically. It is an event that occurs every year with increasing intensity.
Board critics, like Morris Manitoba area farmer and vice president of the Western Canadian Wheat Growers Association, Rolf Penner, are less concerned.
All those same multinationals that people seem to be concerned about are doing a lot of business on behalf of the Canadian Wheat Board right now. Right now, you've got 80 or over 80 accredited exporters doing all sorts of kind of business, you know, that are making money selling farmers grain, you know, and they take a very healthy cut, and then the wheat board takes their cut, and the farmers get what's left over. You're talking about a system that actually exists right now, and when we compare the kind of returns that those companies make on crops like canola and oats that are outside of the board's jurisdiction, those companies actually make a lot less money off of farmers running the non-board grains, and that's what we're going to see in an open market system, is they're actually going to have to be a lot more competitive and tighten their belts if they want to get the business.
We have needs that corporate Canada cannot meet, because a corporation and a marketplace can never measure needs. A marketplace has never been able to deliver a cure for malaria because the people that need the cure couldn't create a demand that would justify the investment in finding the cure.
Have they learned nothing from deregulating the banks and the financial institutions? Where are we today? Why do we have a 99% movement? Because they have allowed corporate control of the finances, and now they're allowing, promoting total control of our food.
You know, I would challenge that as well. I mean, there's been all sorts of data to show that it's actually the regulations that caused the problems with the housing crash and the banking problems, you know, in the States and worldwide. So again, you know, I'd ask you to check your premises. If you think that it's caused by deregulation, I would argue that a lot of these problems are caused by too much regulation. And that's exactly the problem we have here with the wheat industry and the barley industry in Canada, is we've got too many people meddling in between willing buyers and sellers. And it's causing serious economic problems. And that's something that needs to be rectified. And I'm certainly glad to hear that the Harper government is finally going to do something about this injustice that's been going on for over 50 years.
Friends of the Canadian Wheat Board and the Canadian Wheat Board itself have launched legal challenges against the federal government, arguing their bill was introduced without having first conducted a vote among farmers. Hearings on the first of these lawsuits will commence December 6th in Winnipeg. For Groundwire, I'm Michael Welch with CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
For those of you who have just tuned in, you're listening to Groundwire, community news from coast to coast to coast. This November 6th edition was produced at CHW Radio Western on the beautiful campus of the University of Western Ontario in London, Ontario. Now back to your features. A lesbian couple in a small southern Ontario town were kicked out of a Tim Hortons in October. Riley Duckworth and Patricia Pattenden were sitting outside a Tim Hortons in Blenheim, Ontario with their family when a manager told them to leave. She said that they were acting inappropriately and were breaking the family-friendly image that they were trying to promote. She also threatened to call the police on them if they didn't leave. Riley Duckworth describes what happened.
The assistant manager came out and said that what Pat and I were doing wasn't acceptable, and really all we were doing was she had her hand around my waist, and you know, she gave me a peck on the cheek here and there, but I mean, other than that, we didn't do anything since the family was there. But she said that it wasn't acceptable and it was a family friendly environment, and that our type, quote unquote, wasn't, you know, shouldn't be displaying that type of affection at their location, and that we would need to leave within, you know, 5 minutes or the cops would be called.
Prior to this, an assistant pastor from the Glad Tidings Church in Blenheim had seen the couple and alerted the management. He also called a prayer circle to pray for the souls of the couple after they had left. Here's Michelle Boyce, a local LGBTQ activist and host of CHW's Between the Margins, interviewing Riley.
I understand that there was a prayer circle?
Yeah, after we left about 10 minutes later, from, you know, what Pat's mother told us, she was still standing outside with Pat's brother and the cousins, and the pastor held a prayer circle out in the parking lot, the family friends, and I guess 10 minutes later or so.
And I understand there was like 15, 20 people attending?
Yeah, that's what I heard, yeah. There was quite a group of them.
Boyce, as a human rights activist, felt very uncomfortable by the prayer circle.
So, and I mean, I'm not going to, you know, restrict the pastor's ability to run a peaceful protest in the parking lot, because that's his right to have a prayer service wherever he so deems. But I mean, my problem comes in where this was actually identified as a prayer circle to pray for two individual souls, and that breaches a line, and that breaches where this individual is identifying two individuals personally, and that crosses into hate speech type behavior, in my opinion.
We tried reaching Tim Hortons for comment, but they did not return our messages. They did, however, release a statement saying the guest behavior went beyond public displays of affection and was making the other guests feel uncomfortable. The incident resulted in protests at the Tim Hortons in Blenheim and London areas. For Groundwire, I'm Ed von Attercass.
Things in paper, no thoughts ever come in words. The sounds that come from doorways are the only sounds of her so far today. 'Cause the car's away, and on the road to something that's not what you bargained for. Trying to stay noticed in this old forgotten war that everybody fights. Nobody is right, and yet I feel like everything is upside down. I wanna get it right side up, but it's nowhere, oh, it's nowhere near to be found. When the seas light up and water say your thoughts today, and I'll give back in any way I can. Just tell me what I shouldn't say, don't die before your hair turns gray, blind man. You traveled so far down those roads to God only knows where. When you finally arrived, you forgot why you were there. But that's okay, 'cause you can stay. What your hopes once were now had considerably shrunk. And involuntarily you spent your night out in a trunk of a car. Home so far.
And that was Alex Earnwine with Blind Man. Like other communities across North America, London, Ontario has seen protesters and activists take to public spaces as part of the Occupy movement. Victoria Park, right in the heart of London, Ontario, and next to City Hall, was chosen as the site of the Occupy protest, and tents and provisional structures went up almost immediately. The protest was not there for long before a backlash from the local government went up. Mayor of the City of London, Joe Fontana, announced that the occupiers would have to leave the encampment, saying they had violated a local bylaw against structures in public parks. The occupiers, though, didn't want to budge. On October 27th, the occupiers marched down Richmond Street to confront Mayor Fontana, who's holding a live-stream town hall meeting in the historic Covent Garden Market downtown. Nicole Markham, a reporter for CHW, was there at the scene of the march.
Marching down Richmond Row right now to the Covent Garden Market on Talbot Street and King Street to talk with Mayor Joe Fontana about the occupation, the status of the bylaw and the campers, what the next moves are in terms of the winter, what the next moves are in terms of public space. Protesters took to the streets at approximately 12:30 p.m. and were ushered back onto sidewalks by the two officers that are accompanying the march down to Covent Garden Market to speak with Joe Fontana. It is noted that the Occupy march has cooperated with authorities by moving back onto the sidewalk, and we continue chanting, we're almost at the Covent Garden Market now.
At the market, the mayor asked to talk with two delegates from the movement. Here is a recording of that exchange.
I mean, this is a global issue. The only reason we're here today, Mayor, is you say you respect this movement. Mm-hmm. This isn't a rally. This isn't a protest. Sure. This is an occupation. So if you respect what we're doing, then you will respect the occupation and you will let us stay in the park with our tents.
I can't accept that. Can you imagine if everybody decided that they wanted to occupy every park in our city?
Yeah! Imagine the change we would get.
I'm sorry. That wouldn't affect change. Look,
it's affecting change over the world. It affected change in North Africa. It affected change in the Middle East. It's affected change in New York. It's affecting change all over Europe, Greece, Spain. I'd imagine that would be one hell of a world. That's the world I want to live in.
The mayor agreed to a special city council meeting with the occupiers the following week, but the meeting was inconclusive. Here's Courtney Dakin, who went to speak to the council on behalf of the occupiers.
Very unsurprising. I mean, they're politicians. Their words were very shallow. They didn't guarantee that they wouldn't resort to violence and forceful removal of the occupants, which was our main purpose of being there, was defending the need to be on public space. They just talked around us to decide that they didn't feel like they could guarantee our safety, which was really troubling to a lot of people because we put a lot of effort into creating a safe space and making it completely inclusive. And we've welcomed police officers into our camp. They you can see that there's really competing interests within that, the municipal political sphere, that as much as they like to think that they're representing us, they're obviously representing interests that conflict with us, specifically those of the corporations in London.
So far, the City Hall has not evicted the protesters yet, but has kept up their demands for them to leave Victoria Park. While some occupiers have moved to the churchyard of the neighboring St. Paul's Anglican Cathedral, the encampment shows no sign of budging.
Reclaim your radio.
On Monday, November 14th,
campus and community radio stations across Canada will participate in a special day-long broadcast celebrating the 11th annual Media Democracy Day.
The 25th anniversary of the National Campus Community Radio Association, or NCRA, and the launch of an NCRA-led campaign to reserve Canadian radio frequencies for campus and community broadcasters.
The special broadcast will air live from 12 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on this station and other participating stations nationwide.
Tune in, turn on, and stand up for community-powered radio.
For more information, visit ncra.ca.
Does it for this edition of Groundwire, a bi-weekly non-profit national news program produced by the community for the community. Groundwire is heard on dozens of campus and community radio stations across the country. To get in touch with us, email us at groundwire@ncra.ca or visit groundwire.ncra.ca for more information. This month's edition was produced at CHRW in London, Ontario. My name is Ed Fonatercas, and I've been your host. Thanks for listening to Groundwire.